Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman. There's Stephanie. And welcome to Andre Watts. Welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Andre Watts will be appearing with the Madison Symphony Orchestra. He is a superstar, and we're just delighted to have him here this afternoon. World-renowned, burst on the scene at the age of 16 and has enjoyed a phenomenal, gigantic career since then. And you'll be performing the music of Saint-Saëns this weekend.
Yes, that's right. Second piano concerto, G minor.
Maybe we'll hear a little bit of that later on, but it's a work that... who was it that said it starts like Bach and ends like Offenbach?
somebody who was really correct.
It does sound a little bit like Bach at the beginning. You've been performing this piece for a long time.
Actually, yes. You know, I played this piece, I think, for the first time when I was 17. And as a matter of fact, I played with Bernstein when I was 16 and, you know, did those young people's concerts and then the Gould substitution. And then there were, I think the next New York Philharmonic concert I played was that July at Lewisohn Stadium with Seiji Ozawa conducting. And it was Seiji's first full-length concert with the New York Philharmonic. And I played Saint-Saëns G minor.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a marvelous piece. Has it changed much in the way you perform it? I should say, has your performance changed much over the past few decades?
No, I've changed a lot. I don't know. I'm sure the performance has changed. I don't sort of think of it in those terms. You know, I mean, you relearn the piece and rethink it and think, oh, well, I think maybe it should do this here. What did he really mean by, you know, get a little slower or get a little louder? You know, what's a little?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's slower? What's louder? Anyway, I think it probably, in general, has not changed very much because it's the piece is a little bit tricky for some ensemble aspects, and of course, you know, a certain amount of fleet-fingeredness that is needed.
Yes.
But musically, it's rather, I don't want to say simplistic, but it's kind of straightforward. You know, it's pretty clear what should be happening at any given moment. And it's not like a Beethoven concerto, mm-hmm. You know, like Beethoven 4, which if I should be so lucky and be playing at 80 years old and, you know, play that piece, I'll re-examine, always find new different things.
Well, then, as long as we have opened the topic, we will go back to sometime prior to 1995 and hear what you did then with the second movement of the Saint-Saëns Piano Concerto No. 2 in G minor. This second movement is a little anomalous because instead of being the kind of slow lyrical thing you'd expect, it's a fast, sparkly scherzando.
Yes. Mendelssohn and Saint-Saëns were really wizards at writing scherzi.
And here you are with the Atlanta Symphony, led by Yoel Levy, back in the mid-90s. Well, you have to say that it's charming above all, I think.
Yes, he was a really a good composer of scherzos. And Saint-Saëns understood the piano so well. So it's very well written and, you know, great orchestrator. And
yes.
So the interplay with the winds, and it's quite, yeah.
I was surprised to read that he was such a child prodigy as a pianist. You know, he had memorized all of the Beethoven sonatas by the time he was 10, and really...
He was, overused word, so very, genius, but very, very close to being a genius. I mean, a brilliant mind in so many areas, not only in music.
Yes, he was a published astronomer, and
writer. You know, he lived, of course, to quite an age, and traveled a lot. Loved traveling, and it irritated him because this sort of old ladies would come up to him and say, "Oh, Matt, and at your age, you went," and he went to Egypt, you know, a number of times.
Yes, he loved North Africa.
And so at one point, one of these ladies said to him, "Oh, and you went all the way to Egypt?" And he said, "Well, I didn't walk."
You know? Yeah. Well, now you were a child prodigy. Certainly, were impressing people at a very early age and continued to.
Yeah, I always sort of say that I wasn't, in the sense that, yes, I played, but I mean, no, I didn't play with an orchestra until I was 10.
Imagine that.
So it wasn't. Well, you know what I mean. In those years, I mean, every year, three or four children between the ages of 7 and 9 or 10 played with the orchestra. So it wasn't that unusual. And then, of course, I didn't play a lot of concerts. You know, I sort of think of child prodigies as those being trotted around, you know, displaying their wares, as it were.
Well, and some of them remain child prodigies and don't endure after that. What do you think the difference is? You certainly have endured.
Well, yeah, luck. It has a lot to do with it, chance elements. You know, the Malcolm Gladwell book, what is it, Outliers?
Mm-hmm.
Which about the 10,000 hours.
Oh, that was really inspiring.
Especially the Bill Gates thing about had he not been at that school and the computer hours on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, there's a lot of truth to that. I was glad to read something like that, and even someone like Bill Gates admitting that, well, if I hadn't been, you know, quite at that place at that time, might not have, you know, we wouldn't be talking about me, as it were. So that's true in I think, all professions. I just had a conversation last week with a conductor friend of mine, and we were talking about, you know, well, how grown up are you? How grown up am I? And, well, you know, if you spend hour after hour after hour every day, day after day, week after week, year after year of your young years at an instrument, you're likely to mature a little bit later. It's likely to be delayed. And so that we do have, you know, so-called adult musicians who are children.
Yes. And, well, Mozart, you know, was one good example.
Mozart, yes. Well, of course, being a genius, that kind of leaves him out. You know, that is separate. And there are wonderful positive things to the childlike, you know, aspects, especially in music and all that. But I think that having a lot of, which doesn't happen much anymore, but having many, many concerts as a child sets up a false impression of what real life is. And then when real life appears on the scene, as it were, you know, when you become an adult, it becomes very difficult.
Well, even Mozart had that problem.
Yes, that's true.
As a performer. Yeah.
And even you see somebody like Yehudi Menuhin, who, you know, as he achieved his majority, as they say, then because he had been in such a hothouse family atmosphere, suddenly he really didn't know what to do, how to deal with his life, with what his thoughts were, trying to find out, well, what are my thoughts, you know, and so forth and so on. What are my opinions? What do I want to do? And so forth and so on. So it gets complicated, yeah.
Well, here's somebody who certainly went through a variety of phases in his lifetime in terms of deciding, well, do I want to be a lover? Do I want to be something else? Do I want to go into the clergy? Do I want to be a great virtuoso? And having attended a concert by Paganini, decided, well, I want to do what he does, but for my instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he actually wrote a set of 6 Paganini etudes that you recorded. Also, this would have been back in the 90s, maybe, late 80s.
Let's see, what are you holding?
I'm thinking of La Campanella.
So 70, probably 76.
Then it took us a while to get it. We didn't get it till 93.
I see.
I'm sure there's still some Andre Watts CDs that we don't have. But tell us something about La Campanella.
Well, La Campanella is a little bell, and it's from Paganini imitation of, you know, the recurring bell sound, which then Liszt, God bless him, you know, decided to organize for the piano, so that your poor pinky fingers constantly out there trying to develop feelers to find the right note and repeat it at the top. Yes, you were saying about Liszt. Yes, well, I think that it only took him a little while to realize that he was all of those things. And It's very difficult, I think, for human beings to accept that we have individuals that we encounter all the time who are committed to many, many different things. You know, I'm a musician. I play the piano. And so that's, you know, the main thrust of my existence. So it's, of course, difficult for me if I meet someone who says, well, yes, I'm an author, and then I also... contributed to the Nobel Prize for Physics and also, you know, play fiddle on the side and, you know, I have a chamber group and, you know, we're having a tennis tournament at Roland Garros, you know, but there are people like
yes,
that.
Yes, there are.
And Liszt was one of them.
This is La Campanella with our guest, André Watts, the pianist. Notes per second?
Too many.
La Campanella by Franz Liszt, as inspired by Paganini.
And this is our guest, André Watts, performing. In fact, he'll be performing live tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday afternoon with the Madison Symphony Orchestra, doing the Piano Concerto No. 2 of Camille Saint-Saëns. There are some other things on the program, including the music of Wagner, the Prelude to Parsifal, and the Symphony No. 2 of Brahms. That's tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday afternoon in Madison with the Madison Symphony Orchestra.
Right. Look forward to more of that. So what would you have changed about that piece we just heard? You haven't recorded it. You haven't played it for a long time.
Oh,
but it's
gosh.
Always fascinating to see the expression on a performer's face when he or she has to listen to...
Well, a little bit that I actually heard. Yeah, what would I change? Yes, I would change some of the, timing impetus. Near the end, there were little things that were condensed, that were condensed in small increments, and if that hadn't been, that would have been a bigger arch if you had done it in larger increments. I don't know how better to explain that. Best is not to think about it and not to listen to your own recordings.
Now, you grew up with a mother who was a pianist. Did she ever teach you? Is that how you started?
She was my first teacher, yes. I mean, she just knew how to play the piano. She wasn't really a pianist and never liked being called a pianist. But she taught me the first year and was the person who pushed me to practice.
You moved around for a while there in your very early years as your father was in the military. Did that
yes.
affect at all your ability to develop as a young pianist, do you think?
Oh, no. I don't know that it had any effect. And if it had had an effect, it would have been positive just from, you know,
really?
I believe the more influence, the better. I mean, especially on children, you know. I mean, I'm not recommending that you move necessarily every year. But it wasn't really that bad. I mean, it was always in Germany. And just we lived in different cities in Germany, and actually for about 3 years in a row in Neu-Ulm. Ulm, I believe, was the first posting of Herbert von Karajan before Aachen. And but this is Neu-Ulm where there was a big army base, you know. And then came to the United States when I was about eight and a half, something like that. Before we came to the States, my mother took me on a trip to Spain and Italy and France, and so I saw lots of interesting things some of which I still remember, you know, peculiar things like the Gaudi in Barcelona. And we went to Lourdes and saw the Colosseum, you know, in Rome, and things like that I'm glad I had that, you know, opportunity as a child. So
it all goes into the music somehow. You
yes,
think?
Yes. Well, as it, you know, as the it all goes into you, and as you are, that is how your music is. You know, I mean, as we get older, when I every once in a while, you know, if I go someplace and you know play with an old colleague, friend as a conductor or something, then every once in a while we chuckle about, you know, everybody plays as they are. You know, people make music, you know, you listen to somebody's music making, you have a good idea of what this person is about. So you can't hide.
Wow.
You can try to hide, but it doesn't work.
It's very reflective of your sense of self, of your personality?
I think so, and it's and that's great, because that's what communication is, you know. It's supposed to be open. If you are trying to hide, then, of course, you... Look, it's already, so to speak, second-hand at best. In other words, a composer wrote something, then he put it on paper, so his inspiration. Then he put it on paper. Then you show up with your baggage and try to figure out what the composer wanted, and then I try to let you hear it. So it's already gone through a number of filters, and if I'm also ducking the business of, oh, they can see inside, you know, then, I mean, there's going to be no communication whatsoever.
You have to have an open-door policy.
A little bit, yes, yeah. Yes, yeah.
And it's always just going to be a thing of the moment anyway. It'll be different each time.
Yes, yes. Well, that's actually why we practice, isn't it? So that we hope that if you have a moment that's sort of kissed by the gods, you'll be able to, you know, maintain the practicalities.
Well, let's have a little intermezzo from Brahms, from Andre Watts, and then our quiz question here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Was a concert performance, and you went right into the next one.
You're right. Yes, it's funny. I heard it in my head also. It's yum, bum, 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 bum.
Well, that was the Intermezzo in C by Brahms with our guest Andre Watts doing the honors, and what fun to have you here again.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's our honor to have you in the studios here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and you'll be performing tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday afternoon with the Madison Symphony Orchestra, the Piano Concerto No. 2 of Camille Saint-Saëns. We hope that everything goes brilliantly this weekend. Know that it will. If you're interested in tickets, the number is 608-258-4141, or you can visit the website for more information, which is madisonsymphony.org.